You are listening to Prometheus by Minute. I'm your host, Courtney Coulson. This is Minute 13. This minute opens with David opening the shield on the windows of the bow of the ship, and ends with Vickers being a badass, doing push-ups straight out of cryo like it's no big deal. David licks his finger before pressing the button to open the shields. The fuck, David? Also, do androids have saliva? If so, why? I gather they have lungs to facilitate in speech. They aren't simply emitting sounds from an internal speaker, they vocalize in an unorganic way. The Covenant novelization also hints that the ability to breathe allows synthetics to analyze the air. That would be handy in the event of a gas leak or fire or finding oneself on an alien planet or, you know, something like that. But saliva? I mean, I guess it would also facilitate in speech in a way, lubrication and all that. The song heard in this scene is called A Planet. It's the main melody that occurs throughout the film, and I assume based on the title it is the theme of LV-223. Have a listen, it's so powerful and majestic. It always gives me goosebumps. It also contains a leitmotif which belongs to David. It's this mechanical whirring, which I think suits him so well. It subtly reminds us that he is a machine, despite all appearances to the contrary. It's like the soundtrack doesn't want us to forget that. We get an extreme close-up on David's face. He has a kind of Disney princess moment gazing out onto the planet, a clear expression of wonder and awe on his face. He's eager to get down there, eager to meet these engineers. This will come up a few times in the film, but beyond polite smiles, he keeps his genuinely happy expressions to himself. He doesn't permit himself that kind of vulnerability or innocence amongst the humans. The opening scene of Covenant seems to suggest he learned to suppress his feelings mere moments after activation. They've really paid attention to detail, including the shadows cast by the ring around the planet. I had never even thought about it before, but yes, of course, it would cast a shadow. I should say, the LV planets are actually moons. That is established in Alien, so Strattenfeld should probably have named the track a moon. We see another planet or moon near LV-223 in this shot. Is it LV-426, or the planet it orbits, Kalpamos? Kalpamos is the gas giant the LV moons orbit. Interesting to note, no one knows where the name Kalpamos came from. It doesn't mean anything, but somehow it became adopted as canon, appearing numerous times in expanded universe materials. In a lot of the behind-the-scenes stuff, they also say planet rather than moon, and I wonder if that has to do with the fact that in our own terrestrial experience, a moon is this empty, lifeless rock, whereas a planet, our planet, is rich and full of life. So if our moon was also habitable, would that change our instinctive concept of a moon versus a planet? It wasn't until I watched Return of the Jedi when I was probably about 10, maybe, and they said that Endor is a moon. It was just like, what? You can have forests on a moon? David notices Vickers is out of a stasis chamber. I like this sequence, how he tilts his head. Again, his expressions are not for the benefit of anyone but himself. I mean, for us, the viewer too, of course. I also like how he follows the wet footsteps. It's just nice visual storytelling through movement and framing. I don't know why she's wet, though. It's way too much to be sweat. Maybe she had a shower? But then, why is she still in her bandage bikini? Did she just spray herself with cold water and that was it? We know, comparing the other crew members, that they are dry when they awaken, so yeah, I guess she just splashed herself with water. We get a close shot of David's footwear. David and Holloway both wear what we in Australia call thongs, aka sandals, aka flip-flops. I'm not a fan of open shoes in general, but I will say it was rather inspired of Ridley to think of. I don't think we've ever seen thongs in sci-fi before, and it certainly was something critics and fans took notice of. It makes sense for Holloway being a bit of a hippie, this is what we expect from this character. But on David, it isn't expected, and therefore creates a juxtaposition. I feel exposed feet are quite a human thing, whereas boots or something like that hide humanity, conceal it within an artificial structure. It's kind of why we tend to think of suits and other more structured garments as being more formal as well. We are creating this illusion, essentially. We are hiding our natural human form. Feet in many cultures are seen as vulgar or unclean, and are therefore rarely exposed. To walk around barefoot is considered uncivilized. Thongs and sandals are common footwear in many countries around the world, but in the West they are usually seen as extremely casual. So it is a surprising costume choice, perhaps even an ironic one. We associate androids with formal clothing, for the aforementioned reasons. There is no need for comfort or convenience. Is there something being conveyed in this costume choice? Perhaps. I think my first impression was that this android wasn't like other androids, and that certainly was true. David has a number of costume changes throughout the film, and I have to wonder what motivates his clothing choices on that particular day. You know, he doesn't have just one standard uniform. When we do have androids in the real world, and I hope that is a when rather than an if, they would probably dress to fit in. They would look at what everyone else is wearing and take cues from that. Walter certainly does this, but David, for David, it is truly self-expression. I couldn't justify it any other way. He is wearing what he feels like wearing, or at least as much as he can. He probably got some parameters he has to stick to. We end on an extreme close-up of Vickers' face. I love Charlize so much, and this is a great establishing moment. You want a bad bitch, you cast Charlize. We have gone from this serene playground that was David's solitude to this abrupt interruption. Vickers is intense, almost animalistic in a ferocity. That look on her face. Ridley seems to like using water and smoke and other elements in his films. And I think Vickers being wet was likely his idea. It's visually dramatic and sets her apart from the serene David and the rest of the crew when they awaken sick and weak. It wasn't in the original script. David was intended to just show up, perfectly dressed as she is in a few minutes from now. But here she is raw and visceral. We are meant to wonder if she's synthetic or not, but I think in this moment it proves that she isn't. Yes, she is powerful and efficient, but through sheer human discipline and force of will, this is everything you need to know about this woman in one scene. She's had to harden up and hide her human insecurities and vulnerabilities, likely due to her childhood, which we will delve further into in future minutes. Much like David, she is not a soulless automaton, but she puts on that exterior as a means of survival. I mentioned before that I didn't get a chance to finish reading Lawrence's Seven Pillars of Wisdom, because regrettably, I wasted my time reading bloody Chariot of the Gods to see if it tied into Prometheus in any way. Beyond the basic idea, I can say that there are no direct parallels, which is a good thing because the book is basically the ramblings of a racist lunatic, and I'm not the first person to say that. Not only is Eric von Daniken an egotist, claiming his theory is revolutionary, but only once does he question any ancient achievements by white people. It's all Africa this and Asia that, and Stonehenge because I guess it's mega famous, so he kind of had to address it. It's one of the most significant texts to come out of the ufology world, but it has had disastrous consequences for these real historical relics. People have damaged these sites by taking samples to do their own testing, despite not getting permission or even being qualified scientists. I'll add an article in the footnotes which goes into more detail about the situation of pseudo-archaeologists, but I think it's fascinating to see the ramifications of people believing something with little evidence. I suppose that ties into themes of Prometheus quite well. It also shows how dangerous and powerful ideas can be. Alright, that about covers it. This is Colson, signing off. You can find me on traviandesigns.com, TRAVIAN, or Prometheus by Minute on Facebook.